Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day on this Monday after the NFL drafts. Of course, the first round wrapped up on Thursday, and we had rounds 2 through 7 throughout the weekend. Joining us now to break it all down is TD, Teron Davenport, brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook. TD, it was a blast to see you at the Cats game on Saturday night, and I know it was a busy weekend for you at the Titans facility, a busy one for the Titans as well. Just overall, your impressions of the draft, and did you take anything away from the Titans picks that lead you to believe they want to build their team and their roster one way or another?
Yeah, I think what it shows is they invested in players that were put a lot of time in, right? They had lengthy college careers. I mean, you look at six out of seven were Senior Bowl players. So that is something that stood out to me. I think overall it was a focus. There was a focus on guys who are very physical, and that's something that's clear. You know, outside, obviously, Jaquan Jackson as a receiver. But, I mean, you look at everyone else, you know, they're pretty physical players.
Yeah, and I think another thing that I took away just from the first two picks, 700 pounds in two picks, J.C. Latham and Devondre Sweat, the defensive tackle out of Texas. I want to focus in on J.C. Latham first. You know, Rand Carthon was very forthright in saying J.C. Latham is going to play left tackle for us. What indication did you get that gave the Titans confidence that he could make that move from right tackle to left?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the fact that he played it a bit in high school is something to look at. But more or less, it's the traits, right? And they feel that he could learn the traits from the left side that they transfer over. Brian Callahan himself said that. You know, at the end of the day, the traits are the traits, and it's just going to be flipping the size.
Now, TD, we've had some callers call in, one in particular, or text in about the receiver position. The Titans chose not to draft a receiver until late. Should we believe that they are going to, which I assume they will, add more depth at that position with free agents, undrafted free agents, and free agents that could potentially get cut, say, in June, July?
Yeah, I mean, it's something they're always looking to find ways to build the roster, but I don't see them. They haven't signed any undrafted free agent receivers that I know of, and we'll see what happens, you know, once teams, you know, have players shake loose as you work through into the June 1st deadline and then also in training camp and things like that. But I think the receiver corps is pretty much set where it is. I probably would have taken Malik Washington over Jaquan Jackson, but I think, you know, that's their decision. And, you know, Jackson does have a degree of explosiveness to him. He's a solid punt returner. But, again, I would have taken Washington over him.
Now, their second-round pick, obviously, Devontae Sweat, big fella. We know he can move, but obviously there were some red flags there. You know, the DUI late in the process, that does drop you some. But this still was if you take that away, this is a top 30 individual that many people have ranked on their board. So how do you think they envision Sweat? Is he going to be a guy that they start immediately right alongside Jeffrey Simmons if the weight thing is not an issue?
Yeah, I think he probably will start immediately or at the very least be a very impactful player from the jump. And, you know, granted, the DWI is something that he had. And, look, it's not good. Mm-hmm. It's not. There's no way to sugarcoat it. But I think a lot of people have to get off their high horse and you know, understand that mistakes happen. You know, I know that personally. And it's just one of those things where, you know, they went and they vetted it out and they got enough reason to believe that this is a decent person, a good person who you know, made some bad decisions. And I think that's the way they look at it. On the field, though, I mean, you look at all the pressures that he does generate. You look at how difficult he makes it as far as teams trying to run the football and how he's gonna two-gap, right? He's going to be a guy that you're going to have to put a good amount of attention to, and that should free things up for other players as far as rushing the passer, you know, not getting double teams for Jeffrey Simmons. And then even for your Cedric Grays, your Kenneth Murrays, your Jack Gibbons, Otis Reese the fourth, those guys, they're going to get clean shots at running backs, you know. And I think that's something that is kind of floating under the radar. So he does make people around him better. Now it's just going to be getting that weight right. If you get at that 350, 355 range, they have something to work with.
We're talking with Teron Davenport, ESPN, and Titans insider. Two guys I you know, want to talk about here, Cedric Gray and Jarvis Brownlee Lee. Obviously, you draft Cedric Lee in the fourth round. I'm sure they earmarked him as their middle back or their green dot guy, so to speak. And then Jarvis Brownlee Jr., a guy that can add depth to what we believe is a good with the additions that they made with the cornerback position, a good secondary, but it always can be upgraded and obviously needs to be. But how do you envision these two guys?
Yeah, I think Gray at some point is going to become a starter. He's solid coverage-wise, and this is someone you go back and you watch his film, man. Like, he likes to tackle. He's got 3 years of 100-plus tackles, but his range is solid there. There are some times where you see him get, you know, a little bit confused when they, you know, have those combo routes and things like that. But I think he's going to be a solid player. And he, in fact, as Rand Carthon said, and others have said it, you know, in the evaluation process, he's very capable of wearing the green dot. So that matches right there. Jarvis Brownlee Jr., I really liked him. And he's someone coming back from the Senior Bowl. I talked about him a lot. And he's one of those guys, you know, he has that Courtland Finnegan to him, just as far as like that feistiness and the type that you want to fight when you play against him or practice against him. And that's a good thing. Now, solid at pattern matching, too. Saw that at the Senior Bowl. Sometimes he'll guess a bit, but it seems like he guesses right more than he does wrong. So that's a good thing. But, you know, if you do guess wrong, it's 6 points that's being given up. So you got to be careful there. But he's feisty. He wants to come up and mix it up against the run, too. He's physical at the line of scrimmage. Those are all things that you like. And I think he's going to be a pretty good change of pace or backup, you know, when they want to get Roger McCreary some rest. They could get him in there at the nickel.
Now, are you surprised after, you know, your conversations with Rand Carthon prior to the draft, and I'm sure as the draft was going on or right after they made their first round pick, are you surprised that they didn't try to trade out of that 38 pick and move down and try to accumulate a third round pick or another pick?
Well, I mean, in multiple conversations I had with multiple people, it started to come out that trading back wasn't as important. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they wanted to get extra picks, but the way the depth of this draft worked, it didn't really become as imperative for them to do it. So that's more or less from the multiple conversations I had with, you know, different people. And I think, you know, it was a situation where they had guys that they were set on, you know, in those opportunities where they could have traded back. And those were the guys, and that's what they stuck with. And I think that's just trusting, you know, your evaluation and your board and not moving off of it.
Now, I'm not going to ask you to grade this draft because Ryan already talked about it. I mean, it's kind of mute to degrade the draft right now because you really don't know what these players are going to be able to do. But do you feel they addressed the needs? Do you feel they went in, they got what they went into the draft seeking?
Yeah, I think they really did. I firmly believe that they went in and addressed a series of needs, and they just did it kind of systematically. Where you went in, okay, boom, you needed help on the O-line. You got a guy on the O-line. You needed help in the trenches on defense. You got that because you needed to help Jeffrey Simmons. Boom, you got that. And then you just keep going through. You needed a guy who was very capable of being the green dot. Got exactly that in Cedric Gray. You needed help in the return game, a little bit more explosiveness in the passing game. You got that in Jaquan Jackson. You needed, depth at cornerback. You got that in Jarvis Brownlee Jr. I think they did address mostly everything. The tight end position is going to be interesting watching that play out. But they did sign the guy from Temple, and he's a very athletic player. So definitely make sure you keep an eye on him. He'll be in Temple's, in the Titans' minicamp there the rookie minicamp. So definitely I keep an eye on him.
We're talking with Jerron Davenport, brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook. I'm glad that D-Mays brought up the potential of trading back, because that's one thing that Rand Carthon mentioned on Friday night after rounds 2 and 3. It was, the phone was ringing. We just wanted to stay put. Looking at a lot of the evaluation from the NFL draft insiders, and I know that, day after draft evaluation is so subjective and based on just opinion, but a lot of the opinions were the concern about the Titans draft was value, that they liked J.C. Latham as a player, but just not at 7, or they liked T'Vondre Sweat as a player, but felt like the Titans could have waited on T'Vondre Sweat given how his stock fell after some off-the-field concerns going into the draft. What do you make of the Titans' value, and was it, prioritizing need maybe a little bit more than best player available, and is that the approach that Rand Carthon intends to make when building this roster?
Well, value really comes down to the person you're asking, right? Mm-hmm. So clearly they value the people who are making the pick. They value J.C. Latham enough to take him at 7. So I don't really get into that whole, okay, is it a good value for everybody? No, it probably isn't, but it's a good value for them. They value T'Vondre Sweat enough to take him at 38. They made the pick at 38. So it's a good value for them. Now, person X on digital or person X on TV may not see it of that same value. But the thing is, person X and person Y weren't the ones making the pick. So you also have to look at, who knows if the Jets would have taken J.C. Latham or not, mm-hmm. as opposed to Olufashinu. We could all sit here and say, hey, player so-and-so would have been available 8 picks later, but we don't know that. And then it goes back to what I said. They set their board. They trusted their board. They had guys that they valued, and they weren't risking not being able to get those guys.
That was my point about T'Vondre Sweat, was I was hearing a lot of talk about, that was maybe a questionable pick or a surprising pick. And I said, look, if they can't live without him, then they can't live without him. Then you stick and pick that player. But, when it comes to evaluation of these players, we can say all day long to wait and see. But I think the evaluation on Monday, the day after the draft, it's going to happen. So I understand that if that's a player that you can't live without, and if that's a player that you view as a foundational player moving forward, then you take them. Jerron Davenport is with us. Now that the Titans have gone through the draft process, we're kind of getting into UDFA and second round of free agency, what would you say are the top priorities positional-wise as the Titans continue to build this roster?
Yeah, I think safety and tight end are the ones that they have to look at. And it's funny, soon after the draft, Mekhi Becton signed with the Eagles. I thought maybe right tackle would be something that they look at, but they seem to be very confident in, Nicholas Petit-Ferrer and Jalen Duncan, that battle solving their right tackle issue. So, I would say tight end safety. Rand Carthon has said that, they got some things in the works, some things are coming. So I would imagine those two positions will be addressed at some point before minicamp, I would imagine.
What are just some non-Titans NFL draft thoughts? What was your initial reaction when the Atlanta Falcons took Michael Penix Jr. with the 8th overall pick?
Yeah, very confused, because Penix is an older player, and not that I don't discourage drafting older prospects, but in this situation, he's already a little bit older, and he's going to automatically have to sit 1 to 2 years. So it's confusing there, and especially after turning around and investing so much money in Kirk Cousins, I don't know what they're going to do there. So that was a strange one to me. Again, it goes to value, right? They valued him enough to take at 8. And I think he's a really good player. I just don't know that I made that move in that particular situation.
Okay, beside Penix, I think the other one was Bo Nix. It just seemed like there was a run on quarterbacks.
Yeah.
After Penix went, it seemed like teams move up. J.J. McCarthy goes next, and then, Bo Nix, and then another quarterback. Or was it another quarterback, then Bo Nix? Are you surprised with the Bo Nix in the first round?
Yeah, I am surprised with the Bo Nix in the first round. That's an interesting one. He played a lot of football in college. He's definitely experienced, but I think when you look at traits, like, there's not anything that he does in particular where you're like, yeah, I have to have that on my team. Mm-hmm. That's how I would look at it. But obviously, you know, Denver, apparently Denver has had a first-round grade on him, you know, throughout the process, and they like him enough. And, I mean, I guess we'll see what happens. It'll be he and Zach Wilson kind of battling it out. So that'll be interesting to see.
Keep forgetting. Zach Wilson's in Denver now.
Is there, yes. I guess Sean Payton feels he can make a quarterback out of anybody.
He sure made a quarterback out of Drew Brees, that's for sure.
Yeah.
What about Joe Alt, DD? I was so convinced that, you know, since the Chargers took Rashawn Slater just a couple of years ago, he's their starting left tackle. The Chargers had such a need at wide receiver. Left tackle really felt like that and quarterback were the only positions that the Chargers didn't need to address. I was shocked when I saw the Chargers take Joe Alt, even after we heard Jim Harbaugh talk up the offensive line all pre-draft process. What was your reaction there? And do you think if he was available to the Titans at 7, that the Titans would have taken Joe Alt?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised by that. I mean, look, they spoke of the offensive line, and yes, Trey Pimkins is you know, a three-year starter. And he's a guy they used the third-round pick on a few years ago. But, I mean, if you could upgrade your team, you're going to upgrade your team. And that's clearly what they wanted to do there. The receiver position, and this is something that kind of frustrates me sometimes, because it just seems like people forget that there's 7 rounds of the draft, right? And just because they didn't take it in the first round doesn't mean that they're not going to address it. And guess what they did? They drafted 2 more receivers, you know, in the coming rounds. So I think when you look at it, Jim Harbaugh, this isn't the first time that he's had a guy who played left tackle that flipped to right. The 49ers did it. Now, it was before Jim Harbaugh got there, but Anthony Davis came from Rutgers as a left tackle and flipped to right tackle, and they had those two sides set for quite a few years. So I think that's something that they're looking to do, and I don't think it was a bad pick. I think if J.C. Latham and Art were there, I have a good feeling that Latham would have still been the pick, to be honest with you, because I know that he, like a few other teams, was right there neck and neck with Joe Art on their board, and it was like that for a few teams. And, you know, that's just kind of how it fell out.
Last one before we get you out of here, TD. I'm curious, just based off of your evaluation, the 6 quarterbacks in the first 12 picks, which is absurd. It is crazy. But which quarterback taken in the first round do you think has enough pieces around them, just given their own ability and also the coaching staff, is most poised for the most successful season this upcoming year?
Oh, that's simple. It's Caleb Williams. I mean, look, you got a decent running game behind you. You got DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and a nice rookie in Rome Odunze.
Yep.
And you got Cole Kmet. I can never pronounce his last name, the tight end. Look, man, you're in really good shape there. And they did some things to address the defense. I don't see how Caleb Williams, you know, doesn't be successful.
Fair point. TD, brought to you by ESPN Bet. TD, before we get you out of here, tell us about ESPN Bet.
Yeah, for sure. ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the huge moments this spring. It's the exclusive sports book of ESPN, and it has it all, whether it be offers and promotions from Scott Van Pelt and Stephen A. Smith, from the playoff intensity to getting on the links and out to the ballpark. There's no better time to be a sports fan than right now. As a new user, you get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. So download ESPN Bet today. What a play. You must be 21 or older and in Tennessee. For problem gambling support, call or text the TN Red Line at 800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. See the app for details.
TD, you're the best. Appreciate you for stopping by, and we'll catch up with you next Monday.
All right, appreciate it.
All right,
later.
Thanks, TD. TD, Teron Davenport. We will react to what he had to say coming up next. We'll also get into your thoughts as well, and everything is on the table. We've got a bunch of Predators thoughts. I feel like we're trying to maybe forget about the pain that was last night, a 4-3 overtime loss after going into the third period, up 3-1. We'll get into your thoughts on that. We'll get into your draft thoughts as well. Everything on the table. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Do you want to get in some of your thoughts, draft thoughts, Titans thoughts, Predators thoughts? Everything is on the table. But on Friday's show, we were all J.C. Latham, all Predators. Mm-hmm. It was, 3 hours jam-packed. We didn't really get a chance to react to any of the other first-round picks. D-Mace, we just caught up with TD, and I wanted to get his reaction on this. Your reaction to the Falcons drafting Michael Penix Jr. 8th overall.
I was surprised. Obviously, I know why they did it. Even when they made the pick, and so we were talking about it, the first thought was, well, the Achilles and, Kirk Cousins isn't a spring chicken. But then you look at it and say Michael Penix isn't a spring chicken anyway, either, considering, the age coming out of college. He's
in drafted quarterback years, yeah.
He would be, 24 or 25?
He's 24 now.
Yeah, he'd be 25 before the season starts, I think, during the season. So you're getting a guy that really has been through one contract. I'm quoting, it's like one contract, really. If you take it, if you look at guys his age, and typically they're around that 25, 26-year-old guys when they're getting their second contract.
Like Caleb Williams is 22.
Exactly. So you're basically 3 years older than him. And you got drafted in the first round, which means they need to find out if he's the guy sooner rather than later because of his age.
He'll that's be almost
why,
30.
Yeah, that's why I'm surprised, because if you predict, even if you say, well, Kirk Cousins will play two seasons, because I think they could keep him. I think they have to keep him for two seasons. Mm-hmm. But then that third season, he's only guaranteed 10 of the $45 million. So you can sort of get out of it after that second year if it's not working. But then that puts him at, 27, 28 years old? Like, don't you need to find out before then whether he's going to be your guy or not?
Yeah.
Because of the age? So that's why I'm surprised they drafted him. Not the actual person, because I think he's a hell of a quarterback.
Penix is a great player.
But it's the age. I'm not even talking about the injury stuff. It's just the age. Because he needs to start sooner rather than later.
To the point
or they need
the
to figure out whether he can be a starter sooner rather than later.
100. That's an eighth overall pick?
Yeah.
Like, that's not just like a let's take a flyer on this quarterback in the sixth round. Like, the Patriots took Joe Milton in the sixth round. It's like, let's just take a flyer on this quarterback, and if he comes to fruition, great. If he doesn't, no harm, no foul. That's your first round. That's your top 10 pick.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to the point about the player, I am with you. I love Michael Penix Jr. That whenever J.J. McCarthy's draft stock was getting inflated, I was shocked that it wasn't Michael Penix Jr. that was getting all of the love, because I felt like Washington's success this past season had so much more to do with Michael Penix Jr. and his ability and his contributions in the passing game versus J.J. McCarthy and his contributions to Michigan's team. So I was shocked that it was J.J. McCarthy getting all the love versus Michael Penix Jr. But the Falcons, of all teams,
yeah,
they just signed Kirk Cousins to a $150 million contract. He hasn't even taken a snap in a Falcons uniform before you drafted his replacement. And to be fair, I think that a lot of Falcons fans are telling themselves, well, the Chiefs drafted Patrick Mahomes in the first round in 2017 when Alex Smith was coming off of a Pro Bowl season. So you constantly have to be thinking about that next guy. Mm-hmm. That's what's made the Packers so successful for the last 40 years, and it's because they always had that next guy. They drafted Aaron Rodgers when Brett Favre was already in the fold. They drafted Jordan Love when Aaron Rodgers was coming off of MVP seasons. So it's like the Green Bay Packers model of getting ahead of drafting a quarterback versus having to chase that next quarterback. I understand that. But also, I view the Falcons as a team that could potentially be really good this year. With Kirk Cousins as their quarterback, they have Drake London, a really solid young wide receiver. They drafted Bijan Robinson in the first round last year, have a solid run game, have a solid offensive line. I know that they weren't necessarily an edge rusher away from being a Super Bowl contender, but they certainly weren't a Michael Penix Jr. away from being a contender. They were more of an edge rusher away from being a contender than they were a young developing quarterback on the bench. So I was shocked when I saw that. But if you love a guy, you love a guy, I guess.
Yeah,
especially at that position.
You love him. And I know other teams have did it, have done it, excuse me. You know, you brought up Kansas City. But, you know, when Andy Reid is a part of the draft and you figure, yeah, he can draft a quarterback because he has a good track record with quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So if Andy wants to draft a quarterback, just like Bill Callahan, Bill has a great track record with offensive linemen. So you don't question. So I don't think people question the Kansas City pick that much because it's, you know, Andy Reid, and Andy Reid typically turns out really good quarterbacks.
And it got some pushback.
Yeah, it did, but I don't think it got a – because I can recall that draft, and I remember telling the guys that were on me with me at the time, Darren and I think it was Willie or Chase, one of the two, and I said, I guarantee you that Alex Smith has the best season he has ever had because of that pick. And he did. He had the best season he had ever had up until that point. And that brought him a huge contract with the Washington Commanders. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately for him, he gets hurt. But maybe that's the way that Atlanta is looking at this. Let's draft a year ahead, because they were going to have to draft a receiver. I mean, not a receiver, but a quarterback, period. They were going to have to draft a quarterback. Possibly not this year. More than likely it was going to be next year. But I think they probably looked at it as, he's still on the board. We love him. And let's draft him, because then if we draft him now, we can sit him for a year or two, more 2 years, allow Kirk Cousins to be our quarterback, and then eventually segue out of Kirk Cousins. He will be a part of the system. He will know the offense, meaning Michael Penix. But then it's like, can you survive that long, head coach? You know, can you survive 2 years of, you know, drafting this guy this year and waiting to, are you even going to be the coach in 2 years, mm-hmm. you know, by making a pick? Because you make a pick like this, and if your season goes upside down,
that's your job.
People are looking at that pick. Regardless of how he fares 2 or 3 years down the line, people are looking at that pick right now and saying, you shouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm. You should have drafted based upon your need, which was defensive players.
Right.
You know, so, and there were defensive players to be gotten, especially top 10 defensive players. And you chose to go the offensive route when you just went and got a quarterback.
And I could say, you know, why wouldn't you wait on Michael Penix Jr.? But also, I didn't think Bo Nix was going to go 12th overall. So maybe there was such a need and run on quarterbacks that the Falcons looked at it and said, if we don't do it right now, we're never going to be able to do it. But that is a job on the line kind of pick.
Oh, of course.
In Atlanta. Want to get back into your thoughts on the draft, on the Predators. Everything is on the line. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. One texter texts in and says, I'm excited about J.C. Latham under Bill Callahan. He will not fail. I will say this. Bill Callahan is a hell of a player. Mm-hmm. And I have the kind of trust in him because he has the resume and the track record that says I should have that trust in him. That if there is going to be anybody that gets anything out of any offensive lineman, Bill Callahan is going to be the one to do it. Mm-hmm. But I would also like to remind everyone that Jeff Stoutland is the offensive line coach in Philadelphia. If Bill Callahan isn't the best offensive line coach in the league, Jeff Stoutland is. They're viewed as a 1-2 punch. Andre Dillard was drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles in the first round of the NFL draft, and Jeff Stoutland couldn't get anything out of him. Mm-hmm. I am not saying that J.C. Latham is Andre Dillard in the slightest. If he is,
God
help us. Lord help us. I don't think he will be. Mm-hmm. But I will say, again, Bill Callahan is not a magician. He's a really good coach. Even really good coaches sometimes can't get the most, or sometimes players won't be incredibly successful just because of who's coaching them. Mm-hmm. If he's not a fit for left tackle, he's not a fit for left tackle. Bill Callahan, if he can't do it, then nobody can. Mm-hmm. And then you've got a really sticky situation at left tackle. So, yes, I feel incredibly confident about Bill Callahan as the offensive line coach, but I can't say that no one's going to fail under Bill Callahan, because Andre Dillard failed under Jeff Stoutland.
Yeah, it's not a definite that, you know, that whatever offensive lineman they bring in here, he will be an automatic success because of Bill Callahan. That's not the case. I think it's a working relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, as a coach, I am tasked to, you know, teach you and bring out of you the best. it's up to you to accept that coaching and want the best to come out of you. I do my part. You got to do your part. If I do my part, you don't do your part, it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. So if we're trusting in Bill Callahan, then what you're saying is, people are saying is they're trusting in J.C. Latham too. And that's great, because I trust the big fella. I think he's going to come in and do what he needs to do, be coachable, and allow, you know, Bill Callahan to bring out the best while giving, you know, making sure he gives the best of what Bill Callahan is trying to bring out. So I believe in it, but it takes two to tangle. It can't just be a Bill Callahan, you know, pouring if you're not receptive to it, mm-hmm. as an offensive lineman or a player, period. We've all heard it, you know, uncoachable players, immense talent, but uncoachable.
Yeah.
Great coaches can coach players that they may not get greatness out of because they're not coachable. Mm-hmm. They're not receiving it, especially if they have the talent. I'm saying if they have the talent.
Yeah.
J.C. Latham has the talent. Now, does he has the ability to be coachable? Does he want it more than Bill Callahan wants it? I think he does. Mm-hmm. I think he'd be all right. But there's always the other side of that coin. No matter how much Bill tries to pull out of you, if you're not willing to give it or see it, then it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Cameron Texan says, here's the thing that nobody ever talks about. We have the same dumb bleep scouts that led to all of those bad picks. I think you're taking heat away from where the heat needs to be directed. Mm-hmm. Scouts don't make picks.
No.
General managers make
picks.
They
just tell you what they see in a player and what they think of the player.
Like, I will always point to the 2021 draft as being one of the big downfalls of John mm-hmm. Robinson as the general manager of the Tennessee Titans. How do we know that the scouts didn't inform, you know, all of the powers that be, like, look, this guy's medicals are really a big red flag, and John Robinson just ignored it? Like, we don't know that. Is there an issue with the scouting? Maybe.
Yeah,
but the blame goes on the general manager, because the general manager does the drafting.
Yeah, when you do the drafting, I mean, the scouts do the grunt work, and it's a thankless job.
Because they never get the credit.
Exactly. They never get the credit. They go out, they scout the players, and they give the intel to the GM, and then it's up to the GM to make ultimately the picks, the GM and head coach. So, you know, you can't put it all on the GMs. They're out doing their job. They're evaluating. Maybe they evaluate a guy and say, nah, he's not a third rounder, but you end up drafting him in the third round. I'm just giving examples. I'm not saying that's what the Titans did. I'm just saying, giving examples. A scout can come in and say, hey, listen, I scouted this guy, and he's damn good, but you still end up taking him in the third or fourth round. That's not up to the scout. He just gave you what he thought about him, mm-hmm. his intel on a player. So you can't blame it all on the scouts. Yeah, the scouts do bear some responsibility, but they're not picking the guys quickly.
Yeah.
Travis Kelce just signed an extension with the Kansas City Chiefs. It's a 2-year extension. They haven't given the terms of the contract yet.
Hope
but
that
it's
works
a 2-year,
out for the Chiefs. I'm kidding. Yeah,
it's a 2-year extension. Man, I hope he's a baller. But it's a two-year extension. So he'll end up retiring at Kansas City Chiefs.
Other Kelce news. I saw Jason Kelce is now headed to ESPN.
Absolutely.
I think he's going to kill it.
I think he's going to do a good job. He seems like he has the personality for it. I mean, I like offensive linemen. It seems like I don't think I've met an offensive lineman that didn't have a personality. They're quiet a lot of times, but they, like, you sit and talk with them and joke, they have personality.
I feel like there is such a stereotype mm-hmm. for an offensive line personality. And I say stereotype, I mean, like, in the best possible
exactly.
way. And every offensive lineman that I've ever met is just the goofiest, most mm-hmm. fun, bubbly person to be around. Maybe a little bit of a screw loose.
Yeah.
But in the best possible
exactly.
way.
Exactly.
All right, coming up next, D-Mace and I were at the Nashville Cats inaugural game. I guess re-inaugural? Second inaugural?
Yeah, I guess. It's a second.
Second generation around. Inaugural yeah. game.
Exactly.
Our full breakdown of our Nashville Cats experience. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game in the Game Nashville app. The Nashville Cats had their home opener of the weekend, and D-Mace and I were there. Mm-hmm. It was my first Arena League football experience. I had no idea what to expect. Mm. I walked in, and I thought, what in the world? What kind of alternate universe am I in right now with this teeny tiny little itty bitty little Polly Pocket football field? But I had a blast. D-Mace, your first, I guess not your first, but your Nashville Cats experience.
It was my first.
It was your first.
I've watched Arena League football. I watched the Cats when they were here the first go around when they were very successful and everybody loved them and they had a really good team coached by, you know, a great individual is Sperduto. So I watched them a lot. They would practice over at the facility too. But I never actually went to a game. So went to this game and I enjoyed it. You know, I heard Big Joe this morning talking about it and some people complaining, you know, about, you know, the lines to get in. I mean, it was a beautiful day outside.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it could have been worse. It could have been cold. It could have been raining. But it was beautiful outside. And to stand, you know, outside and just, you know, just take it all in. I think that was the good part. And then once you got in, got a chance to run into Darren and his beautiful wife. And, you know, his son and got a chance to talk. I hadn't seen Darren in a good while.
Yeah.
Obviously ran into you and Dylan. We sat together, TD as well. But I enjoyed it. I really did enjoy it. It was a good atmosphere. And I think my thing to either it was either you or TD. And I said, listen, if this team, like, starts winning and they won their first game, it looked great. But I said, if this team really starts winning – this momentum is going to pick up, and this because it was almost packed in there. It was almost sold out in there. There were some empty spots, but it was a good crowd, a lot of noise. The wave was wonderful.
It was a solid crowd.
They keep winning games, which I think they will. This place might end up being packed.
Yeah.
So it was. I had a great time. I enjoyed it. It seemed like you guys had a great time as well.
We had such a fun time. People were complaining about the lines.
Yeah, that's what Big Joe said. Some people were complaining about the lines. I mean,
I didn't even really think it was exactly. That bad. It was a little bit of
well,
a line.
Well, when I
expected.
First got there, there was a line. And I sort of sat in the car because I had parked and I can see the entrance. So I set my car to the line, sort of died down and whatnot. And I got in there pretty easy. It was pretty quick. I mean, you know, it wasn't, you know, they were not holding people up. It wasn't. You know, like they didn't know what they were doing. They were trying to get people through efficiently as possible, whether you had a ticket, a physical ticket or a digital ticket. I think people got in very quickly. But once you got in, it was great. The one thing I was kind of confused about, and I think you and Dylan were as well, it's like we didn't know where to sit because they didn't have no actual seat numbers on there.
Because we just had GA tickets.
Yeah, general admission, yeah.
I assumed that there was like a GA section where you would just get directed there, and then if you had an actual ticket, you would go into your actual section. So I was just kind of looking around like, I might just go sit in an open seat.
And that's ultimately what we end up doing. We end up sitting in, we found four seats that were, you know, on a second tier, but it was close.
Pretty solid view.
Pretty solid view. I mean, you know, I think all of us got into the wave.
Oh, yeah.
And then we got into booing the Minnesota, whatever their names were.
Minnesota Myth?
Yeah, Minnesota Myth. They were trash. Myth's trash.
Are the Cats insanely good? Or
I think the
Cats.
No, I think the Cats are good. I believe the Cats are good. But that other team was trash.
47-12 was the final score.
So, I mean, I like what I saw from the Cats, and I will go to more games because it's entertaining.
Yeah,
it's enjoyable. You know, I know they play away this weekend coming up their way, but I gotta see is their next game in Clarksville, the next home game, is it in Clarksville or they have a few more games before they play in Clarksville? Because I know they got one in Clarksville. Listen, people, if you can go out to a game, please take your kids out to a game. It's not the NFL, but it's still entertaining and it's still fun.
It was an absolute blast. And I went to an XFL game in St. Louis last spring, and it gave me that same kind of vibes. And people were just into it, and people were having so much fun. And no, it's not the NFL, but it doesn't need to be because it was as much fun in and of itself. I had a great time. Shout out to the Nashville Cats. I know I for sure will be back. D-Mace will be as well. And we'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company is up next.
Be love and love on your people. Happy Monday and peace.